Recording in progress.
Hello, Chair.
Yes, Bebalo.
We are good to go, Chairperson. Over to you, Chair.
Okay, Dr. Mampo, is she on the platform? Dr. Mampo?
She is on the platform, Chairperson.
Who's there?
I'm sorry. Apologies, it's Tobisa Magazi in the office of the committee, so she is here.
Who is here?
Good morning, Chairperson. This is Mampo speaking. I'm here.
Oh, okay.
So we're in the office together, so we're just trying to deal with the IT issues so that we don't stress the committee, but I'm here, Chair.
But are you ready to go?
Yes, we are definitely ready to go.
Okay, okay. Thank you very much. You're all welcome.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Can you see the agenda, Lubabalo? Good morning, honorable members, colleagues from the support staff, parliament, colleagues from Treasury, Team Treasury led by Dr. Modise, honorable members, and all other participants on the platform, you are all welcome. Let me take this opportunity to send a special welcome and announce to members that we have a new member of the committee, Honorable Linda Moss, who is going to replace Honorable Njatu. Honorable Njatu has been given another responsibility on other committees, but he will still be an alternate member to Honorable Moss. So don't be surprised as and when you see him with us. Honorable members, let me not waste much of your time. I know we don't have the luxury of time. Now we have to finish. That's my thinking. That's my wish. And I don't know if we will be able to live up to that, honorable members and team treasurer. At least by 12 o'clock, we must be done so that we can be able to travel to parliament for the sitting, because most of us, we don't have offices. We couldn't be at parliament in the morning for this meeting. Hence, it's a full visual. You are welcome. Let's go to item number 2, Lubabalo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson and members. Chair, we have an apology from Mr. Karim. Mr.
Yeah.
Karim experienced traveling challenges yesterday, so he was unable to travel from KZN to Cape Town. So he is going to miss this meeting, Chairperson. Thank you.
Yeah, he informed me about that. Only that.
That's correct, Chairperson. Yes, only that, Chairperson, because my phone, I don't have any message of any other apology.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that's the one I know about as well. We are noting the apology, actually accepting the apology by Honorable Karim, because his situation was beyond his control. There was nothing he could have done. He tried anyway. having dealt with the apologies, now we go to item number 3, which is a briefing by National Treasury on the appropriation bill. Of the 2023, I will request Paul to do the presentation, and please bear in mind that we don't have the luxury of time as we would like to wish, but we will do everything possible and do justice to the discussions. Over to you, Dr. Modise.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Thank you so much for allowing us to do the presentations. So today we're going to look at two presentations. The one would be on the appropriations bill, and the second one would be done by my colleague Duncan Petersen, and this would be on the ESCOM bill. So Chairperson and honorable members, please allow me to ask Kobisa to do the presentation on National Treasurer's behalf. I'm just sharing the screen now so that she can take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members and Chairperson. I'm gonna do the presentation on behalf of the National Treasury on the 2023 appropriation bill. Let me just, okay. So we're just trying to fix our screen. All right, thank you so much. Do let me know if you can see the screen on your side, if I may just get confirmation, please. Okay.
Yes, we see it.
Thank you so much, honorable member. I'm just gonna start off by just giving an overview of how the presentation is going to go. Before you, it's a slide that basically sets out the layout of the presentation, which is just a background information about the appropriation and then the parliamentary processes, which we're not going to delve too much into today in the interest of time. Then we will go into the actual technical issues around the 2023 appropriation bill itself and the processes around that. We'll then outline the issues pertaining to the explanatory document, which is the 2023 estimates of national expenditure, then go into just highlighting some of the major highlights in terms of the budget itself that was tabled in February. We'll then conclude the presentation really by just providing an overview of some of the summary appropriations and where there have been some changes effected through this process. It is a legislated requirement that it provides for appropriation of money by Parliament from the National Revenue Fund in terms of Section 230 of the Constitution of the Republic, and as also set out in terms of Section 26 of the PFMA. According to the Constitution, the requirement as per the Constitution is that the appropriation bill needs money that may be drawn for and appropriated and by an Act of Parliament through either a direct charge or against the fund where it is provided for purposes of appropriating money for a financial year and for meeting the requirements of the state, as would be also outlined in Section 26 of the PFMA. In addition, Section 7 of one of the Money Bill Related Matters Act also provides that for the Minister of Finance that he must table an annual budget as set out in terms of Section 27 of the PFMA in the National Assembly at the same time as the appropriation bill as well. When it comes to the appropriation bill, as the parliamentary members will be aware, this budget was tabled on the 22nd of February this year by the Minister of Finance, which basically proposes the appropriation of money through the National Revenue Fund for these requirements that I have alluded to in terms of meeting the requirements of the state for 2023-2024 financial year. And also in terms of describes the conditions for the spending of funds funds withdrawn from the 2024-25 financial year before the commencement of the Appropriation Act for 2024-25, and also provides requirements for any incidental matters that would need to be catered for in terms of the bill. The parliamentary process, I'm not going to go in great detail, is that what is key is the fact that Parliament, through the Monies Amendment Procedure related matters, is allowed or provided a role in terms of the budget process, which is in terms of really enhancing some of the requirements and the provisions that are, the recommendations that have been put forward, and making amendments to some of those recommendations on funding. The budget, in terms of how it is handled, is dealt primarily through the standing committees of finance of appropriations, which comprises of the two parliamentary houses. There are, of course, portfolio committees that are also responsible for dealing with the most strategic issues, the budgetary and strategic planning issues of individual departments. Then when it comes to the post-facto related issues, these issues would be dealt through the Public Accounts Committee, who would then also look and appraise of issues that have been raised by the Auditor General regarding processes of allocations and spending as well. The Parliament would also be the required to vote first on the fiscal framework, as well as the division of revenue, then sequentially then deal with the appropriation bill as we are presenting today. In terms of the processes as well, committees of appropriations may not consider amendments to the appropriation bill prior to the passing of the Division of Revenue Bill. And any amendments that need to be considered in terms of the appropriation bill must be consistent with the adopted fiscal framework and the Division of Revenue that would be passed by Parliament. So when it comes to amending the appropriation bill, the reports of the Committee of Appropriations to the House must present these proposals and amendments in respect of
housekeeping matters. We have a situation that someone on the platform is identified as 1924. If you can assist by please renaming so that we know who is on the platform, otherwise you will be taken out of the platform. My apologies on that, madam. We have to deal with that so that we know who is here. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will just continue then around the processes on amending the appropriation bill and some of the considerations that the House, the committee would need to consider. One of the key issues in respect of the amendments, they would need to indicate the reasons for their proposed amendments. They would need to demonstrate how the amendments takes into account the broad strategic priorities and allocations of relevant budgets, and demonstrate the implications of each proposed amendment for an affected vote and the main divisions within a vote. It would equally need to demonstrate the impact of any proposed amendment on the balance between the transfer payments and the capital and recurrent spending in an affected vote, as well as set out the impact of any proposed amendment on service delivery. And I think in concluding in some of this point, one of the key considerations on amendments would be the manner in which the amendments relate to prevailing departmental strategic plans, reports of the Auditor General and committee reports adopted by the House, and reports in terms of Section 32 of the PFMA as well, and other standing rules that may be applicable to the committee as well. When it comes to the 2023 appropriation bill, I have also previously outlined generally where this is actually the powers, how the powers are actually conferred, but I do want to specifically draw the committee's attention to the processes around the Monies Bill Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Amendment Act, and the requirements that have been set out in terms of the tabling of the budget. In terms of Section 8.6, the Committee of Finance must within 16 days or as soon as reasonably possible thereafter submit a report to the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces on the fiscal framework and revenue proposals. Similarly, in terms of Section 8, after
Recording in progress.
Performance of the financial year, expenditure may not exceed 45% of the total amount appropriated in the previous annual budget. During the subsequent months of the financial year, expenditure may not exceed 10% of the total amount appropriated in the previous annual budget, and in an aggregate, that expenditure may not exceed the total amount appropriated in the previous annual budget. When it comes to the promulgation of the 2023 appropriation bill, what is therefore necessary to note is that it allows for a monthly expenditure above the transactional provisions contained in PFMA, and also ensures the expenditure is in accordance with the purposes stated in the Act. I'm now going to go into the more the critical issues and the structural issues of the bill itself, which will then take us into the next discussion on the estimates of expenditure, as well as the actual composition of and the summary of the appropriations related to the 2023-24. What I think is quite critical to note regarding the structure of the bill is the fact that the bill is structured in sections. One of the critical sections to the bill is the one that deals with the specifically and exclusively appropriated funds, which is section 3 of the bill. When it comes to this, what it basically outlines for the benefit of those members who might not be familiar with some of these things is that an amount that is marked specifically and exclusively earmarked in the schedule may not be used for the purpose may only be used for the purpose for which it is intended for, unless the amount of purpose is amended by or in terms of an Act of Parliament. Section 4 of the bill then goes and outlines some of the conditions that applies to the use of the appropriated funds. In this instance, it prescribes that the minister may, in writing, impose conditions on an amount in a schedule other than a conditional allocation in order to promote transparency and accountability and the effective management and of the appropriations. And in some instances, the minister may exercise to use this particular provision to stop the use of any amount in respect of which conditions imposed in terms of the paragraph above have not been met. When it comes to Section 5 of the bill, Section 5 basically deals with the use of unspent funds. It sets out the parameters under which the minister is permitted to allow the use of funds. And in some instances, it also provides parameters under which the minister does not have the delegated authority to basically use unspent funds, and those are set out in the presentation. So I'll just give an overview of the instances under which the minister may allow, as permitted in terms of Section 4 of 43.4 of the PFMA. The minister may, in terms of transfers and subsidies to other institutions, allow for the use of funds to be used elsewhere within the same main division. The minister may also allow, in terms of payments of capital assets, allow the use of these funds elsewhere within the same division as well, and the payments of financial assets to be used elsewhere within the same division, main division as well. The instances under which the minister may not use the funds is in instances where it relates to the funds that the conditions that have set out in terms of subsection 1, C and D and E, where it relates to issues of compensation. The rest of the bill, honourable members, then deals with issues around delegation and some of the issues and the regulations that the minister can set in giving effect to the appropriation bill itself. So I will not go into detail about those. When it comes to the rest of the structure of the bill does also provide for the setting of appropriations per vote. And it also provides for the division of the allocations, the main division within a vote, which is the programs, the transfers and subsidies to national departments within a vote, for instance. It also does provide some key categorization of allocations in terms of current payment transfers, payments of capital assets, as well as payments for financial assets. And I think in the subsequent slides, we'll just go into detail about the actual appropriations. But prior to that, I just wanted to, just for information purpose as well, just to provide information to the honorable members that the explanatory memorandum to this appropriation bill is the estimates of national expenditure, which can be accessed through the National Treasury website with the information that has been provided there. So what is key to note in terms of some of the details of the E&E is that it provides an overview of the mandate and purpose of a particular institution and the programs, together with some of the program relevant objectives and descriptions of some of the sub-programs. It does also provide high-level information on performance data and targets, as well as outline what will be achieved over the MTF period and some of the spending, especially at an economic classification level, including information and details of selected applicant entities as well as personnel. When it comes to the budget that was tabled in 2023, some of the critical issues, just for recapping purposes, I do wish to just draw some of the issues that would be critical as the parliamentary members, the honourable members, consider this appropriation bill. That the fiscal strategy overall, it retains the consolidation strategy that has been set out in previous years. While this is the case, it does also provide for additional support or continued support for purposes of protecting our social wage and investment in infrastructure, while also strengthening our criminal justice systems without really resorting to additional tax measures or any that could actually have an adverse impact on economic growth as well. Overall, the GDP growth is increased by 0.29% in real terms in terms of 2023, compared with an estimate of 1.4% at the time of the tabling of the MTPPS, which basically shows that it showed that the economy will be recovering slowly to 1%, and an expected projected growth of 1.8% in 2025. When it comes to consolidated expenditure, the consolidated expenditure over the MTF period is sitting at over 1.7 trillion, just above 1.7 trillion. And that is mainly really in the main, as you would see in the box that is on the far left. Most of that budget would actually be towards supporting our social wage, with 3.5 trillion of that, or equivalent to 51%. Being funds that have been set aside for some of the social wage-related objectives and programs, which relate to programs such as community development, employment programs, health, education, and social protection. The net increase of the budget that was tabled basically presents a net increase of around 128.4 billion in terms of non-interest spending. That is actually over the MTF period compared to what was tabled in 2022 budget. When it comes to additional allocations, the additional allocations that have been set forward amount to over 227 billion, and 91 billion of that is funds that would be appropriated through the 2023-24 financial year, with 61.3 billion of that appropriated in 2024-25. And the remainder appropriated in year 2025-26, which is 47.7 billion. And what is quite key in terms of some of the additional funds is the fact that additional allocations have been put forward for purposes of extending the social relief distress grant to, this is the COVID-19 one, by 12 months up until 2024, March 2024, that is. What is also quite critical in terms of some of the major highlights is that the 2023 budget, it does also provide a primary surplus of about 1.7% by 2024-25, while the consolidated debt is set to narrow from 4.2% in terms of our overall GDP in 2023-24 to 3.2% by 2024-25. What is also quite important in terms of the overall, and especially when it relates to the additional allocations, is that aside from the social relief distress grant, the allocations, the additional allocations also do provide for the carry through effect of the 2023 public service wage increases, as well as additional investment in infrastructure and support for safety and security and education and health services. I will now then go in just without really just provide an overview of some of the spending pressures that were considered as part of the 2023 budget. And I think similarly to the point that was made in the previous slide, the main budget is expected to increase by over 91 billion, which supports the areas that have not lined as per the presentation. As you will see from the slide, the bulk of that money would be sitting in service delivery related objectives, while some of it would also provide for the carry through of the 23 public service wage increase and infrastructure in certain instances and all. When it comes to the social wage, there's additional detail around the social wage. What is key to note regarding this, the proposed expenditure? A bulk of that expenditure, really, the increases are mainly in terms of providing additional support in terms of basic education support, as well as the social protection related expenditure. There is also a significant amount of expenditure that's going to the community development component of the social wage, which relates to programs such as the housing development, transport, as well as provision of basic services at local government. While there is also a component that's also directly looking into the social security funds, as well as some of the employment programs and that. So I think this is something that is additional detail to the previous slides that we have outlined already. What is also key to note for the honorable members is that the budget that has been tabled also provides for provisional allocations of around 1.5 billion in terms of the priority areas that have been defined. What this effectively means is that these are allocations that have not yet been confirmed, where in certain instances there are certain conditionalities that need to be met, or there are certain requirements to do or not to do, which would need to be then confirmed later on. And these are likely then confirmed when the minister tables the 2023 MTPPS in October. So what is quite key in terms of this provisional allocations, the largest amount that has been put forward in terms of this is a provisional allocation for the South African Revenue Services as well. When it comes to the summary, overall summary of the appropriations, the bulk of the funding, as you would see, is in areas such as transfers and subsidies, as well as also supporting current payments or increases in current payments linked to some of the issues that would have been outlined in the previous slides in terms of the carry through effects of the social wage of the 2023. So one area to note really is the amount of funds that have been appropriated, for instance, for items such as goods and services, as well as compensation, as well as appropriations that have been put forward for capital assets and financial assets as well. When it comes to the votes, we in terms of this, what is quite key to note in terms of where the main departments that constituted the bulk of the appropriations. 62.9% of these allocations are sitting in portfolios such as the Cooperative Governance, Department of Higher Education, and Departments of Social Development, as well as Police and Transport, mainly for the provision of the basic services and provision of students and universities and funding of the TVT colleges and training centers, as well as social funds and crime prevention, etc., as well as road transport and networks as well. So when it comes to expenditure in terms of compensation of employees, I think what is critical to note, honorable members, is that a lot of the funding is sitting in your labor intensive portfolios. The largest component of expenditure when it comes to COE is sitting in portfolios such as the Department of Higher Education, Police and Defense and Justice, as well as Correctional Services, and mainly provides really for salaries, and especially when it comes to higher education, the salaries of over 16,000 TVET, as well as 9,000 CET lecturers, whereas when it comes to the peace and security cluster, related departments, this would then provide for salaries related to the personnel of those particular departments. So I think it's quite a distinguishing factor for those critical departments than any other. And it's something that should be taken into cognizance as to the sort of the labor intensity of that work and why they would actually have a higher spend when it comes to issues of COE. When it comes to goods and services, we've tried to rank them according to the highest department. And a lot of that of spending when it comes to goods and services, it's sitting in portfolios such as police defense and correctional services. This is actually similar to the picture that we saw in terms of compensation. Due to the fact that these are indeed labor-intensive departments, then these would be the sort of concomitant resources that are supporting those functions when it comes to goods and services as well. But I think what is also good to note is also the fact that there are similarly higher spending on goods and services in portfolios such as cooperative governance, which mainly provides for the community works program, as well as the departments such as Home Affairs, which has a lot of computer-related services due to the automation and the nature of the services that have been rendered. And some of those are actually services that are also requiring a lot of operating leases and property payments related expenditure, supporting that the processes and the operations of the department. Similarly, when it comes to departments such as Department of Education as well, they do have a high spending when it comes to issues of printing and distribution, which is related to the printing of studying materials, which would be expenditures that would be incurred in terms of goods and services. That is expenditure that mainly supports your learners that are in grade R to grade 9. When it comes to portfolios such as international relations and cooperation, due to the fact that they are operating in missions abroad, they do tend to have an expenditure that is higher, relatively higher than others when it comes to goods and services linked to the focus of their operations outside of the country as well. They tend to also do have a high expenditure when it comes to operating leases and operating payments that is also linked to that setup. Other departments that are noteworthy as well is in terms of Department of Health when it comes to their expenditure on issues of medicine and medical supplies and overall contracting and operating leases. Similarly, departments such as Department of Agriculture as well would have a higher spend on issues around administrative support, as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs, due to also outsourced services that are linked to the rendering of the EPW program as well. When it comes to transfers, transfers are mainly in departments such as the Department of Cooperative Governance, which mainly provides for the equitable shares linked to, among others, such as programs such as the Municipal Infrastructure Grant. Similarly, when it comes to departments such as Health, they do have a high spend when it comes to transfers, which is also linked to some of the public entities under health and human resources and training granted that is attached to that portfolio. When it comes to Treasury, the main transfers would be to support some of the departmental agencies. One of the entities to distinguish in the regard would be the transfers to the South African Receiver of Revenue Services as well. When it comes to basic education, a lot of the transfers would be in the space of infrastructure grant as well as the school nutrition program, while in our head it would relate to transfers that have been made to universities as well as supporting NSFAS. And for the Department of Social Development, a lot of the transfers would be sitting in the social grant space. While in transport, a bulk of the transfers are sitting in transactions that are related to SANRAL and PRASA, and as well as the Provincial Roads Maintenance Grant for public and public transport operation networks of grants that are under that particular vote as well. When it comes to matters of payments of capital assets, what is quite the key to note in terms of the key departments that receive the bulk of payments for capital assets it would be your basic education department, which is mainly a provision for the school infrastructure backlog grant, as well as indirect grants that are designated for special programs, as outlined in terms of Schedule 3A of the DORA Act. In health, the key capital assets are in terms of the construction and maintenance and upgrading of and rehabilitation of existing infrastructure, health infrastructure. In police, the provision on capital assets really provides mainly for construction and upgrading of police stations as well as machinery and equipment, whereas in departments such as water and sanitation, the bulk of the capital assets would be sitting in transfers or in activities that support the bulk regional infrastructure and water services infrastructure grants, as well as some of indirect grants for designated special programs, which are similarly outlined in terms of Section 6B of the DORA. When it comes to financial assets, the department that has an allocation towards financial assets is the National Treasury, and the funding of 1.9 billion that have been appropriated in 2023-24 may provide for the recapitalization of the Land and Agriculture Development Bank, which is a 1 billion amount, as well as a World Bank subscription amount, which is around 273.3 million, as well as an African Development and African Development Fund contribution of 638.9 million. In closing, honorable members and chairperson, the summary of I do want to just end and conclude with just providing an overview summary of some of the allocations that have been provided through this 2023 appropriation bill. What is one of the key points is the fact that a lot of the allocations that have been put forward here are in relation to the increases that are required for the social spending, and especially when it comes to increasing of the social grant value. And to that effect, 5.9 billion has been actually set aside for this purpose in terms of the 2023 appropriation bill. But over the MTF collectively, that comes to over 29.6 billion. When it comes to the extended special COVID social relief and distress grant, an amount of 36.1 billion has been set aside in 2023 to extend this program by a further 12 months up until 31st March 2024. The public service wage related increments, these are appropriated an amount of around 15 billion for the 2023 financial year, of which 4.8 of that is for national government and 10.2 of that is actually going to provinces. There is also appropriations that have been put in terms of this 2023 appropriation bill for purposes of the budget facility for infrastructure. And a 7.2 billion has been appropriated for 2023-24, whereas over the MTF period, it would come to over 26.4 billion. They, as alluded in the previous slide as well, there are additional allocations for purposes of health services and education. And respectively, these portfolios have been allocated around 7.5 billion as well as 6.1 billion over for the 2023-24 financial year. In conclusion, I think that summarizes some of the allocations that have been put forward. I do wish to thank the portfolio committee, to thank the committee for your indulgence in these matters. That concludes the presentation on the 2023 appropriation bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We are the select committee.
Committee.
I understand that you are used to the language in the NA where they have the portfolio committees, but it's not a challenge. Do we have another one to make a presentation, Dr. Modise?
No. Dr. Peterson will be doing the ESCOM debt relief bill.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Peterson.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members. My name is Duncan Peterson. I work in the Asset and Liability Management Division at the National Treasury. My colleague Ravesh is just putting up the presentation now, and I was told that we were asked not to take longer than we need to so that we have enough time for discussion. So we only have about 7 slides, Chair, so I'll be going through them now. Ravesh, we can start with the first slide.
The next slide.
Yeah. Next slide, please, Ravesh. On my side, I think the title slide is still showing.
Yeah, to all of us, I think we need to move.
Okay, it could be Hello. My colleague. Yes, Ravesh, go ahead.
Hello, Chairperson, it's Lubabari, Chair.
Yes, sir.
If Ravesh is experiencing network challenges, maybe I am available to assist Chairperson.
Okay. Do you have the presentation?
That's correct, Chairperson.
Okay, please assist.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yeah, okay, there sir. We go. Thanks so much for your assistance. Yeah, next slide, please. Thank you. So, Chair, the government is changing the way that it is supporting Eskom to deal with its unsustainable debt burden. And there are several reasons why a different approach is being proposed. The current solution that we had in the fiscal framework prior to this year, which was where we provided 250 billion rand for Eskom over 10 years, clearly did not efficiently address Eskom's underlying solvency and liquidity challenges. And their debt that Eskom has, which is guaranteed debt and which was at risk of default, raises our cost of borrowing. And we took a view that dealing with Eskom's debt will allow the entity to undertake the investment needed, in particular in critical transmission and other generation infrastructure, and to allow Eskom to prioritize maintenance on the existing fleet. And we therefore believe that an optimally designed Eskom debt relief arrangement with the right conditions can help to assist with reform of the electricity sector, unlock investment, and assist with the growth challenges that we are having. Next slide, please. So what are the key features of the approach? Well, we announced, the Minister of Finance did in the budget review, a debt relief arrangement of 254 billion, which consists of 186 billion rand in capital that Eskom has to repay, as well as about 86 billion rand in interest that we are going to assist Eskom with over the next 3 years. It's a balance sheet transaction and not a spending appropriation, which is why it is treated in a particular way from fiscal accounting terms. And the debt relief bill, which is what we are presenting before the Select Committee today, was therefore tabled to give effect to this debt relief arrangement. Next slide. So what are the key elements of that bill, Chair? The bill proposes that the National Treasury will advance specific amounts as a loan to Eskom on dates determined by the Minister of Finance. The bill then enables the Minister to impose conditions before that loan or portions of that loan can be converted into equity or into ordinary shares issued by Eskom to the state. The bill proposes 78 billion to Eskom in the current financial year, 66 billion next year, and 40 billion in the outer year. And these advances cover the full capital and interest payments required by Eskom over the next few years and may only be used for that purpose. Over and above this, the bill further proposes a 70 billion rand takeover of Eskom's loan portfolio, which will be finalized in the third year of the three-year period. The bill requires that the National Treasury will report to the relevant parliamentary committees on Eskom's compliance with the conditions and disclose any amounts that are converted over time from a loan to Eskom into equity. Next. The funds are only advanced when the debt settlements fall due. As we've indicated previously, we are providing the funds to Eskom in a different way than how we've provided funds to state-owned companies before. And this is a very important shift, Chair, because one of the bits of feedback that we've consistently received from Parliament is that the ways in which bailouts are given to state-owned companies are not being done in a manner that effectively safeguards public finances. And typically, those funds would go to these entities without conditions and as recapitalization payments or equity injections. With Eskom, we are doing something different. We are giving Eskom a loan, which is an advanced to Eskom for the repayment of specific conditions and which may only be converted into equity by the state if Eskom meets these very specific conditions, which we will get into later. And these conditions have been developed to safeguard public money and have been proposed as part of the budget review and will be finalized once the Eskom debt relief bill is enacted into law. We mentioned earlier that there will be various accountability mechanisms between the National Treasury, the Department of Public Enterprises, and Eskom. One of those are quarterly meetings that will take place between the three entities to ensure that Eskom makes the right progress in achieving the conditions. A failure by Eskom to adhere to the conditions set out by the Minister of Finance will mean that the loan will not be be converted into equity, and will instead be converted from an interest-free loan to an interest-bearing loan that will be repaid by Eskom to the National Revenue Fund at market rates. And those rates will be determined towards the end of the debt relief period. Importantly also, Chair, government guarantees for Eskom debt will reduce as the guaranteed debt is settled so that we can also overall enhance the overall quality and sustainability of the fiscal framework. What are the conditions that are being proposed? And these are the last few slides, Chair and Honourable Members. There are about seven conditions that are being proposed for the debt relief. And should Eskom meet these conditions, the interest-free loan will then be converted into equity on a quarterly basis. First condition is Eskom's capital expenditure is restricted to a few things. Eskom may only undertake capital expenditure in transmission, distribution, capital for environmental meeting of environmental standards, and for maintenance capital expenditure on the existing coal fleet. No other capital expenditure will be allowed during the debt relief period. So Eskom's CapEx is restricted to transmission, distribution, and maintenance CapEx on the existing coal fleet. Eskom may not use the proceeds of the sale of non-core assets for capital and operating needs. Any non-core assets that are sold by the entity will be used for the debt relief arrangement and to further reduce their debt. No new borrowing will be allowed until the end of the debt relief period, unless permission is granted by the Minister of Finance. And this, Chair, is because the amounts that are being given to Eskom fully cover Eskom's capital and interest requirements for the next 3 years. So there's no need for Eskom to borrow, and all of the expenses, whether it's capital expenditure, whether it is funding for the diesel plants, etc., will be funded from their own revenue, which will be, of course, assisted by the fact that they no longer have to convert revenue to capital and interest, And they will have also benefited from a relatively higher tariff regime that was announced by NERSA on the 12th of January this year. Eskom's guarantee framework will also reduce in line with the debt repayments and with National Treasury recommendations. And then the final set of conditions, any positive balances in Eskom derivative contracts cannot be used for new borrowing. So effectively, to the extent that their derivative contracts allow them to access additional funding, they cannot do so. The debt relief may only be used to settle debt and interest payments. And finally, Eskom may not implement remuneration adjustments that negatively affect their overall financial position and sustainability. And those, Chair, are the conditions that are being proposed along with the debt relief bill. Thank you again, Chair, and to the honourable members for giving us this opportunity to present the Eskom debt relief bill to yourselves.
Thank you very much, Team Treasurer. Dr. Modisa, I think you will come after the members pose the clarity-seeking questions. For now, I think you're done with your two presentations. Next.
We are done. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. While we are members, please raise your hand as an indication that you want to engage on the two presentations on the two bills. And while we are doing that, Balo, please, and Esther, identify members who wants to speak. I will pose my questions. I will start with the first presentation on the appropriation bill. What I would like to know is how this bill supports the economic recovery infrastructure-led economy. How does it impact on the vision or the commitment or the program or the plan by the government? And then we've also noted the budget cuts in some of the vote allocation. What I would like to know is how these budget cuts will impact the government mandates going forward. Amongst other things that have been noted or have not been noted is that is there any allocation earmarked to address these challenges around, this is a CD with a scratch. Please listen me carefully, and when you answer me, just be specific and straightforward so that when we take the matter forward, we know from what is the thinking of Team Treasurer, because it was also raised in my province, the issue of Moloto development corridor. What is the progress so far? And I'm saying this because in two weeks back, there was an announcement by we saw on the media by the Premier of Gauteng that there's a plan or in the pipeline between Gauteng and Limpopo, the two premiers, that they're going to have a speed train. So I'm just thinking, where does this leave Mpumalanga? Because Mpumalanga is between the two provinces. Maybe the route to that is something else, but there's this outstanding thing that is in the heart of the people of Tembisile JS Moroka, and also people of Limpopo. This corridor, how far are we? Is there a will? Is there an intention to address this? What we have also not seen in this, you'll correct me if it was there, in this presentation, is the resources earmarked for the implementation of the MTSF, National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, while ensuring proper mainstreaming of gender issues, including those of the LGBTQIA+ communities. Having said this shortfall that I think I've identified, I want to know if there's any progress in this regard on the two areas that I have raised. And the issue of the medical legal claims is not for the first time we're raising it. And I think there are serious problems in the health sector in as far as this legal claims are concerned. They are too costly. So I would like to know what measures are being taken to address this, as it absorbs a large amount of resources in the sector. I've heard also in the media that the DA has in Gauteng specifically, because that's what I heard on the radio, complaining about the state of health facilities. But this is not a concern of a party. All of us, we are concerned. And we are saying these claims, legal claims, are a cause for concern. What is it that you are planning to do in as far as this? The last question on this presentation is whether there's any progress in addressing the amount of damage caused by, we know, the floods in KZN, Eastern Cape. They've been affected by these floods, and it has been something that we have been speaking about also in the House and other sector committees. They've been complaining about them, and also as a NSOP, when we went to KZN, it was raised. So my question will be, in as far as this matter, which is negatively affecting the provinces as indicated, aren't there funds being transferred to these provinces to deal with those issues? Or what is the progress to date, if any? Because I think there are so many delays that are causing or are impacting negatively to the social lives or to the generally life of our citizens in these provinces. On the second presentation, which is also appreciated and welcomed, the ESCOM debt relieved, but I have questions. And after this meeting, as say, we are going to Parliament, to the House, we are going to meet with to find out how the proposed 70 billion rands debt takeover in 2025-26 will be financed? How will it be financed? How, where will we get money? Because we know these challenges. Just be open to us. And I think as you committed this amount, you might have had an idea, and I know already you have engaged institutions, or you have looked into the pockets of the state that we can afford this. To ESCOM by municipalities and the government agencies, government departments, and all that. Government departments as in provincial and national. And this issue is also long overdue. It really needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And I think from where I'm sitting, it doesn't help to make noise about it and leave it to the culprit to say something must be done. Where I'm standing now, I think Treasury needs to intervene. When the department is owing the municipality, whether national or provincial, something needs to be done in as far as the budget that you allocating to the department, maybe with the assistant of the provincial treasurer. The last one on this debt relief bill, I just need a clarity on this one. Having said that, this debt relief bill is not an appropriation bill, then what is the rationale of tabling it before the appropriations committee? Just make us understand, why do we even entertain it if it's not an appropriation bill, so that we can smoothly move forward. Honorable Titoit, I see your hand is up. The platform is yours. Honorable Fanny Titoit. Stop with your eyes. Honorable Ryder, I'm coming to you. I saw you.
We were now looking for the join out, eh? That was what the eyes was for.
Oh, okay. Maybe he's double booked. You can come in. He'll come after you.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentations. I think that the appropriations bill is going to need quite a lot of unpacking. The one thing that I did note from the presentation right up front that I just like to emphasize or ask for confirmation of, and that is the fact that we are spending a little bit more than three times the amount that we're spending on basic education, we're spending on higher education. So for every rand that we spend on basic education, which covers the majority of the young population, we're spending 3 rand something on 7% of the population that actually gets to get a university degree. If Treasury can just confirm that is indeed how the appropriations bill has been structured, I think that's quite alarming. And it just shows the real cost of last-minute promises by outgoing presidents. Chair, the The presentation included several remarks about the primary budget surplus. And of course, anyone who's keeping an eye on SARS and SARS's performance over the last couple of weeks knows that the primary budget surplus targets have been missed by between 8 and 10 billion rand, and that's been kicked a little bit down the road. So my first question, therefore, is the current appropriation. If we miss those the budget surplus, if we miss our targets in terms of the income side, is there a plan to tighten the belt a little bit in an adjustment budget so that we can fix the appropriation, make sure we're not spending money dipping into the credit card again and spending money that we haven't yet earned? So that was just a response to the primary budget surplus comments. And then I do think that while we're talking about an adjustment budget, we need to have a look and look at the credibility of the entire appropriations bill at this stage, because realistically what we had is we had a substantial cabinet shuffle subsequent to the budget announcement and the submission of the appropriations bill. Now, a new minister coming in would no doubt want to change certain things. I mean, that nice big fat book, the Estimates of National Expenditure, includes chapters on each department where they tell us about their priorities, they tell us about their direction that they're taking, etc. And of course, as a new minister, that's your only real tool that you have to influence the performance of your department. You look at the programs, you look at where money is being spent. So has Treasury started feeling already some pressure from departments, from new ministers, as they've come in and taken office to change the appropriation? And how soon can we expect to see an adjustment appropriation bill coming forward to do that? Because I think it's only fair on a new minister that they be given the tools to manage their department according to what they want, because otherwise we just get more of the same and they inherit the previous minister's budget and therefore just need to try and do a better job with what they have than the previous minister, which is probably not really fair. And I suppose that goes to my next question. We have a whole new ministry, which currently consists of one person. So when can we expect to see an appropriation which is going to work for the Minister of Electricity? Or is the Minister of Electricity going to be a one-man department working out of the presidency? If Treasury can just give us some guidance on what we can expect with that. Because frankly, Chairperson, I don't see very much movement in terms of the appropriation bill to deal with our key crises that we're facing at the moment. And that specifically is, of course, the electricity problem. Because, of course, the electricity supply problem is what's causing the shortfall in the collections that SARS is doing. Because, first of all, production is down. And second of all, big business is claiming lots of rebates and refunds on the basis of investing in renewable energy. So, can Treasury tell us, has any money been directed towards resolving the energy crisis in the appropriation bill? The next question comes off the back of the Eskom debt relief. And of course, part of the Eskom debt relief ties in with giving some relief to municipalities that owe Eskom lots and lots of money and all of that legacy debt that's sitting on Eskom's balance sheet from municipalities. And of course, the conditions that we have read about in the press, they certainly haven't been put before any committee of parliament in the National Council of Provinces anyway. So those conditions that we're reading about place a substantial burden on municipalities and also on provinces to implement those conditions, in terms of suddenly going out and procuring large amounts of prepaid meters, going out and fixing their financial systems, etc. And that's going to be quite a burden, both on provinces and on municipalities. So can Treasury just confirm for us whether COGTA has been intense in terms of this current appropriation to redirect some of the funding through to provinces and municipalities with a specific eye on bolstering their efforts to try and comply with the conditions that will be placed on that debt relief that the municipalities will be receiving. So then, Chair, that gives a nice segue and a move across to the Eskom debt relief bill. And I think the contents are noted. My big question on that is, I'm quite surprised to see that splitting Eskom into three is not one of the preconditions of the debt relief. And I mean, I would have argued up front that probably the best reason to give Eskom this massive giant bailout would be because we're trying to set up three separate units, three separate companies, three separate entities, and therefore trying to reapportion that historical debt would be like trying to unscramble an egg, and therefore the nationalization of the debt would be required. But now I see that I don't know, the electricity ministers made some comments that maybe that's not going to happen. I would have expected the Treasury would demand it because that was part of the original plan, and it was on that basis that this debt bill was first envisioned, if we are to believe the comments that came from the Treasury Minister at the time, the Finance Minister at the time. So, why is that not a condition? Thank you, Chair. Mr. Detoy, if you're back, I presume you would be next. I'm not sure. It looks like the chair may have dropped off.
Mr. Detoy, are you back?
I'm still here, yes. The load shedding has got its own issues. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate the presentations. I'm partially covered. I want to know, in the presentation of the Eskom bill, it was mentioned that frequent meetings will be held between Eskom and National Treasury and the Minister of Public Enterprises. But nowhere is mention is made of the Minister of Electricity forming part of those meetings. Will that happen? What will his engagement be? Does National Treasury know? Chair, and also with regards to the Eskom bill, it's good and well to say that these funds will be availed over the next three financial years to assist Eskom not to go and acquire any additional funds to cover their debt costs. But does National Treasury have a real-time audit system in place to see to it that Eskom deals with the funds appropriately and the way that they're supposed to do it? Since there are numerous allegations of fraud and corruption and the Zonda report and all that, or I hear what they say with regards to subject to real-time audits that's taking place, as was the case with the disaster funds that was distributed to the different provinces after the 2022 floods. If you can have more information on that, and also just a view from National Treasury side, it's obvious in the appropriations bill, and it's indicated that the larger portion of the bill goes towards social support and government salary components. Is this sustainable? And what do you suggest? How should governments rearrange the allocations and the appropriations to see to it that more funds goes towards development, etc., and us not falling deeper into this social support group that we are currently in? I mean, it's evident that social support is needed in the country. But what is your view? What must be done to get out of the trench that in which we find ourselves in? And is it sustainable over the long run, seeing that interest rates are going up? The economy is definitely under tremendous strain as a result of the load shedding that state. Sales reduction, that they will not be able to do any payments should that happen, and as well as insurance companies like OUTsurance also distancing themselves from payouts should a total blackout occur. And I think that is things that must definitely be taken into consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Is there another hand, Honourable Okam?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yeah, I've been covered with most of the issues because I know when Mr. Ryder speaks, he will cover most of it. The one question that I want to ask, Honourable Chairperson, is with regards to the Director of Public Prosecutions. We had the Zondo Commission report. There has been a huge number of people being implicated, and we hear that the public prosecutions are going to take place. What we've seen now in recent history is that some of those cases were prosecuted, but they were so badly prosecuted and evidence was so badly presented that Section 174 discharges were given even before the accused had to present their case. One of the things that came up is for money to be set aside and to be made available for the Director of Public Prosecutions to be able to make use of private legal experts to assist with the prosecutions of especially high-profile fraud and corruption cases. These people has got a lot of money due to the fact that they obtained a lot of money through scaly ways. They've got money to pay for the best legal minds in the country, and those legal minds then present them as best as they could, which is very good. We cannot have it where the public prosecutions teams that we put aside to prosecute those instances does not make a match or keep up to the quality of legal representation that the accused in those matters get. So the question is, will there be additional money that can be made available to the Director of Public Prosecutions in order to make sure that we've got good legal teams with excellent expertise that can represent the state in these cases so that the prosecutions of those accused can be done properly. That is from my side. Then another question just with regards to provinces, well, with regards to the Department of Agriculture, again, assistance with regards to natural disasters such as droughts, locusts, etc. We can carry on. I know, and it has been said repeatedly, that money is set aside once a disaster has been declared. But what we saw is that disasters very rarely get declared, and people want to combat that out of their different budgets. I would just try to get an answer, or like to get an answer, on more money set aside for immediate disaster relief. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Okam. Honourable Members, I'm very much happy on the questions that you're raising, because most of the issues that you're raising, these are the issues when given an opportunity to meet with the ministers in the House, you still raise them. And if Treasury is not talking to those issues, it means there's a problem, because we think we raise these issues to the ministers. Ministers must attend to these issues if they come across the challenge of funding. They need to talk to Treasury, and whenever Treasury find an opportunity like this to come to us as appropriation. To talk to issues of funding and planning and all that. We want to see these issues being accommodated. We are not raising these issues representing ourselves. who are raising these issues because these are the issues that affect and are raised by our constituencies, and they need to be considered. So we are public reps, we represent the public, and we humbly request that please talk to the issues that we are raising. Thank you for being consistent, honorable members. Over to you, Team Treasury.
Thank you so much, Chair. Can I just ask quickly that Ulrika Rendani and Gillian just respond to the specific questions, and then I will take the general question, then I will hand over to Duncan to deal with the ESCOM bill. Ulrika?
Okay. Good morning, honorable members. So I'm going to answer the honorable chairperson's questions related to Mulatto Rail, and then answer the questions related to disaster funding. So on the Mulatto Corridor, the appropriation bill has allocations in the Department of Transport budget for the upgrading of the R573. We've had that in the budget for a long time now. Honorable members will recall that in the Political Oversight Committee convened and ran a process in 2013 and 2014. The first part of the agreement amongst the provinces and national government was to upgrade the road, and then when feasible was to consider the rail project. Now, with the rail project, the department then completed a feasibility study in 2014, which came into the budget as a PPP, and we then concluded that this was not a PPP. The project then, so let me just make it clear that the 2023 appropriation bill does not include any allocations for the upgrading of or the construction of a rail network or a rail link from Limpopo into Mpumalanga and then into Gauteng and Pretoria. There are various challenges in understanding the problems that we then face within the context of how low-income workers then commute across provinces and the economic fortunes around for residents within Mpumalanga that then lies within Gauteng. Our last correspondence with the department around this was to say that you have to consider that transport is induced demand in relation to economic development. And we have to consider options around economic development to the residents of Mpumalanga in Mpumalanga. And this was then handed over to the province, who was happy to want to start a new process around all of that, but that hasn't come into the budget. So we have no allocations for any new developments around a rail link in the 2023 appropriation bill. In relation to floods and funding for disasters, honorable members will recall that in the division of one of the major changes that was made within the Division of Revenue Bill related to emergency housing, that's been shifted. So what you will see in the 2023 appropriation bill is in the capital budget of the Department of the Department of Human Settlements, is an allocation related to them taking over those responsibilities of provinces in relation to the delivery of emergency housing. The other mechanisms that we have to fund disasters relates to the immediate response grant that we would have seen both in the Division of Revenue Bill that now also follows into the appropriation bill, is on vote 3 for the Department of Cooperative Governance around both the emergency, the immediate relief grants and the recovery grants. The funding in relation to historic disasters or the disasters that have occurred last financial year was all provided for in the adjustments budget. We also topped up in the adjustments budget the municipal disaster recovery grant, and in the 2022 adjusted appropriation budget, we topped up what used to be the provincial emergency housing grant. So any disasters that happen post the adjustments budget would then be we would then use the standard processes within the Departments of Cooperative Governance and the Department of Water or Human Settlements to provide for any immediate relief. We also had shifts in the adjustments budget in relation to the indirect regional bulk infrastructure grant and water services improvement grant, infrastructure grants in relation to using those funds for water tankering services where water infrastructure was damaged whilst the recovery processes were taking place. So the funding system for disasters exists, and we follow that through into the 2023 appropriation bill. And the application processes around all of that is being coordinated through the Disaster Management Center, both at national and provincial level, and then also through the Department of Human Settlements, because the classification or the categorization for housing emergencies goes beyond what is a normal disaster classification and would include aspects of things such as fires in informal settlements. That wouldn't necessarily be classified as a disaster. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Good morning, honorable members. It's Randani here. I will attempt to deal with two questions, one of which is the one raised by Honorable Ockamp on the issue of the NPA capacity. The budget as tabled provide an additional allocation of 1.3 billion that goes specifically to the National Prosecuting Authority. 750 million of that is for what we call Section 38 appointments. That's where we bring in a specialist from the private sector in order to deal with those complex cases that you referred to. So there is an allocation of 750 million for Section 38 appointments. And secondly, there is a question raised around gender-based violence. I will also attempt to answer that one from the Security Department side, mainly from the Justice and Police. The E&E chapter under the expenditure overview section, that's where we explain in length some of the initiatives that talk to gender-based violence. If I start with justice, for example, there's going to be additional 40 sexual offenses courts. And again, the Tutuzela care centers will be increased from, I think, 60 to 68 in the outer year of the MTF. Within police, there are various initiatives being done there, one of which is to have violence and victim-friendly rooms, specifically for gender-related cases, making sure that every police station has got a victim-friendly room in all the police stations. So these are some of the initiatives, and they are discussed in length in the estimate of national expenditure, I think from page 444 to 445 and page 484. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable members. I will take the two questions on education. So the honorable Ryder is correct. The spending on higher education students is roughly three times that of basic education. But if you think about it, there would be a huge difference given the type of services that each provides. For example, if you are training people to be engineers or doctors, that is very different from teaching maths and reading for foundation phase or even for matrix. So the Honorable Ryder is correct. It is three times. But that is the nature of the service. And then just to add on, Chair, you asked about allocations for disasters in the Division of Revenue Act. There is an add-on to the Education Infrastructure Grant of R283 million to deal with school-related flood damages in the Eastern Cape and in KZN. Thank you.
Are you done, Team Treasurer?
No, Chairperson, we still have a lot of questions. Mark, are you on the line?
Okay.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson. I hope you can hear me. I just want to try to respond very briefly on the medical legal question. So the Department of Health has been working recently on improving case management systems. They've put together a system for reporting all the cases from the provinces that they can then interrogate and work with, and also a set of forensic investigations, because there's been a lot of problematic activities from various sides. That they've been, even the SIU has been involved to some extent on the forensic side. The Noela judgment in the Eastern Cape has opened the door to more of what's called the public health defense, which is that not everybody who gets a medical legal judgment necessarily needs to be permanently in a private facility. Quite a number can be managed in public facilities. The law reform recent reports has been kind of going round and round, and I mean, we really hope it will come to a conclusion soon. What I want to say, Chairperson, is that particularly for the NCOP and the finance of health departments in provinces, that medical legal is a very, very serious issue. And the role of the parliamentarians is really important here. So firstly, if I might say that in that the state liability amendment bill was pulled back by the department, by the Justice Portfolio Committee. The general sense from all three ministers is that that bill needs to go back to the Justice Committee. It needs to be reintroduced, because it makes provision for the public health defense, it makes provision for periodic rather than all-in-one payments and various other things. So this, you know, it's from our side as well, it's a request to the parliamentarians to reintroduce that bill. Secondly, Jefferson, I think the parliamentarians need to be thinking also along with the Department of Health, because remember, the medical legal is primarily a health issue, need to be thinking about a new model for medical legal along the lines of the New Zealand and UK system, where not every medical legal case has to go through a court case. Possibly that if there's a national tribunal put in place which can assess cases on an administrative basis, that kind of standard rates of compensation, to avoid every single case having to go through an extremely expensive and lengthy legal process. So, you know, I think there's an important role for Parliament to consider quite far-reaching reforms to medical legal, and the role of justice and health, as well as ourselves, will be important in that. But I do think Parliament should look at legal reform in the medical legal area. I'll leave it for there for now.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks to the team. So I will just respond to the two quick questions. The first one is on the budget for the Minister of Electricity. I think, Chairperson and Honourable Members, the way in which we do the adjustments budget and when we implement the NMOC processes, we always do the adjustments and the shifting of funds in the adjustments budget, and that will be determined, of course, by the number of people that will be in his office, you know, the structure of what he's going to do and how his performance APPs are going to be structured. So currently they are still working on it, but we have identified funds within the function group where we looked at the budgets for DPME, we look at the budgets for the presidency and other departments to see if we can't deal with this cost pressure within the existing budget. budget. We couldn't really wait for the adjustments budget to do this. Therefore, we have been working with other departments so that we can deal with the funding pressures that are experienced not only by the Minister of Electricity, but by the rest of the departments where before they didn't have deputy ministers, for example, or those departments that were implicated by the changes. So when we come back in the adjustments budget, then we will be one clearer on what the mandate is and what the cost implications are. We would have identified where we need to get the funding, and lastly, we would have dealt with removing some of the funds from different departments to augment funding for the Minister of Electricity and other departments that were implicated by the changes announced by the President. Secondly, there's a question on what happens in terms of the if we don't reach the primary surplus. Honourable Wright, I think here basically the MTBPS allows us to come and present changes in the fiscal framework, whether they due to economic implications or they due to disasters or they due to whatever the case is, we tend to present some of those changes. But the budget process itself is dynamic, so there's changes all the time and there's pressures that are coming through the system all the time. So by the time we get to the MTBPS, we would have a better view or a better feel of what the revenue numbers are, of what the spending pressures are, and what options exist if we have to look at the spending side of things or whether we look at the revenue side. But when we do the budget, we look at the overall picture, we look at the revenue, we look at the spending, we look at the debt matrix, and when we come in the MTBPS, we propose those changes to Parliament for consideration. But we also have to consider things like unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure. We have to look at rollovers and all of that. So it's a package that we will be presenting to Parliament when we get to MTBPS, looking at whether we're still going to achieve our fiscal stance, and if we are not going to achieve the fiscal stance, what are the measures that we will put in place to make sure that the fiscus remains stable. So that is what we are going to be presenting in the MTBPS. Thanks, Honourable Members and Chairperson. Duncan, over to you.
Thanks, Mampo. Good morning again, everyone. There were a few questions on the Eskom debt relief bill. Chair, so I'll start with your questions and then move on to the questions by Honourable Ryder and Dutoy. The first question, Chair, that you asked was how will it be financed? If the Honourable Members go to Table 7.2 in the budget review, you will see that the Eskom debt relief arrangement is reflected as part of our gross borrowing requirement. And so the answer therefore is that it is financed in the same way that we finance our gross borrowing requirement, which will be through a combination of short-term and long-term loans. And those amounts are articulated per year. So it is we are settling the debt of Eskom, and we are settling the debt in the same way that we settle the debt of the sovereign, which is through the gross borrowing requirement, and that is in Table 7.2. The second question, Chair, that you asked was what about the debt owed to Eskom by municipalities? On the 3rd of May, on the Treasury website, we put out the MFMA circular number 124, which is the proposal by which we are hoping to help work with ESCOM to deal with the debt owed to them by municipalities. And the debt owed to them by municipalities, Chair, is by far the biggest amount of outstanding debt that they have, around 57 billion as of a few months ago. And the proposal which is articulated in that circular is that provided municipalities meet certain conditions, a portion of their debt will be that they owe to ESCOM will be written off every year over a three-year period. And one of the key conditions is that the municipality has to ensure that they keep their current accounts up to date, including their account with ESCOM. And if they've complied with the conditions that are articulated in that circular for 12 consecutive months, then they will qualify for having their debt written off. Honourable Ryder asked a related question to that, which is, well, given that some of these conditions that are in that circular may have financial implications for municipalities, are we envisaging redirecting funding to municipalities? And I think the short answer to that is really it depends on the take-up. The relevant division at the Treasury has had various engagements throughout government with provinces and municipalities on this particular circular and the proposal. And the impact of this proposal is really going to be a function of the take-up by the municipalities. And in line with what Mampo said earlier, because the fiscal framework is a dynamic process, if there are particular fiscal issues that come that arise from the take-up by municipalities, then one can address it as and when it arises. There was also a question by Honourable Ryder on unbundling as a condition. The simple answer there is that because unbundling is something we have committed to and we're working very closely with ESCOM on it, it is not something that we saw as a critical issue, because it is something that in our view is happening anyway. In fact, some of the ESCOM colleagues are on the call at the moment, and as recent as late yesterday afternoon, we had a meeting with the ESCOM team around some of the issues relating to unbundling and the debt relief arrangement in particular. It shouldn't be conspicuous by its absence. It is simply not there, because it is something that's part of our discussions. It's in NECOM, it's part of our discussions with ESCOM and so on. But I will say, Chair and Honourable Ryder, the conditions that are currently being listed, they are the proposed conditions, and we will finalise the conditions when the bill is enacted. The Minister of Finance will do that. And so we are collecting, through our engagements in Parliament, various additional proposals for things that may qualify as conditions. Honourable De Toey asked about the Minister of Electricity as part of the engagements. Of course, Honourable De Toey, when we put forward the bill and the related conditions as articulated in Annexure W3 of the budget review, there was not yet a Minister of Electricity. And so, and the Minister of Electricity has, of course, been part of all of our other engagements through NECOM and elsewhere. So if it makes sense for us to add him to that set of quarterly engagements, then we can certainly do so. There was also a question about how do we ensure that funds are used for debt only, or are we doing real-time audits? We have various mechanisms that we use to track the spending happening at ESCOM, including daily liquidity reports that are sent to us by ESCOM. We don't have a real-time audit, but we work very closely with the finance team. And I think what we have said as part of the ESCOM debt relief arrangement is on a quarterly basis, ESCOM is going to have to provide a report to the National Treasury that's going to allow us to assess whether the funds are being used for the purpose that they have been intended for. And only if the Minister of Finance and the National Treasury are satisfied that that is the case, then we will, as it were, sign off on the loan for that quarter and the conversion thereof into equity. So there will be mechanisms through which we will be able to track whether the funds are being used for the purpose that they are intended for, which is for debt capital and interest payments only. I believe, Chair, those were our the only questions on the Eskom bill. If there were any that I've missed, my apologies, and you are welcome to remind us of what those are. Thank you.
Thank you, Team Treasury. Dr. Modise, that was the last person to respond.
Just one more person, Chairperson Lebu. Lebu, please come in.
Thank you very much, Dr. Modise. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm sorry for my camera being, you know, off. I'm on load shedding and struggling with data. Thank you. On the issue of Darat, the question from Honorable Okam around, you know, a specific dedicated, you know, a funding support line towards agriculture, you know, when they are experiencing disaster outbreaks. We have indeed, Honorable Okam, a dedicated line for the production, agriculture production management line that we are using to fund, you know, farmers that are, you know, affected by the disasters in the sector. And that is an in-house support of which, as a National Treasury, for in this appropriation bill, we are proposing $1 billion over the 3-year period. So this is a demonstration that really we are supporting the sector when there's an outbreak, inasmuch as there will be that national support, but also there's a dedicated support, you know, in the department and treasury. We are making sure that through that $1 billion, our support is augmented from the government point of view. Thank you.
Thank you, Lebu. Thank you, Chairperson. This is the Treasury team. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Team Treasury. Can I check from the members if you feel there's a question that you passionately wanted clarity on and it was not clarified? We have a few minutes to 15 minutes before 12 o'clock. And please just direct to the question. I have one that I know it's not answered. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good politician never gives up an opportunity for the platform, so I'll grab it with both hands. Mr. Peterson, thank you very much for your answers. I think it's very informative, and I do hope that Treasury, in its discussions with the municipalities that you say are happening, becomes aware of the fact that the project management skills at that level just don't exist in many instances, and that's why the municipalities have got themselves into the trouble that they've got themselves into. And I do hope that Treasury will be supporting the municipalities to go forward once they get this potential debt relief, to then enable the municipalities to find their way out of it. Because ultimately, the fact that they've got this legacy debt hanging over them that was incurred years ago and before the current players are there, that's really hampering service delivery. So I really appreciated the inputs, and please, more information as soon as you can, as often as you can, will be greatly appreciated. Dr. Modise, I'm sorry, I didn't articulate my question very well, and I realized that when I was going through it in my head. Relating to the appropriations bill in its current format as it comes, as I said, the new ministers came in to a kind of to a done deal almost in terms of the appropriation bill, and I don't think so. In terms of the adjustment appropriation bill, there's not really much room for ministers to move much around and to change things dramatically. They really need to work within the confines of what they've been given initially, and maybe just shifting things from one pocket to the next. I really wanted to ask, have any of the new ministers come forward with an indication that they really want to bring about change within their departments? And I realize I didn't articulate that well. If I can just pass that back to you, please, Dr. Modise. Thank you.
Chairperson, must we go ahead and respond?
Oh, sorry, I was muted. I was talking to myself. I thought before you respond, let me give you also my question, which I think was not responded to adequately. In my questions, I sought clarity in as far as the debt relief bill, having said that is not an appropriation bill. So I wanted to have an understanding as to why is it, what is the rationale behind it being tabled before us as an appropriation committee? What is it? So that we understand our mandate and we don't overstep. As and when you answer now, please focus on these two. Over to you, Dr. Modise, or you can delegate whoever is relevant.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think let me start. Well, I only have one question. Honorable Wright, you make a fair point that when we were presenting, or when we were preparing the appropriation bill and the budget, the ministers, it was before the cabinet reshuffling. But the amounts that we are looking at can be found within the existing baselines. And we are working with the departments to ensure that there is sufficient funding for the operational or the operations of the different offices. But for most of them, it was basically moving the ministers around or between departments rather than adding new ministers. So the only minister that is new is the Minister of Electricity, and we're trying to resolve this between the presidency and the Department of Performance, DPME, Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. When it comes to them changing the way in which they do business or changing how they're going to implement some of their plans, that process, honorable members, takes time. So basically what we encourage departments to do or ministers to do in departments is have a look at how far departments are in the process, then understand where they are in this process, and then changes, of course, or improvements can be done as and when these policies are implemented. What we try to avoid, which we have worked hard to with the departments, is to have the changes in the ministries impacting the implementation of policies in different departments. So we're trying to encourage policy continuity and implementation continuity rather than having a stop as and when the leadership is changed in the system. So we are not too worried about the cost of the new ministers, because we have identified funding within the existing appropriations bill. So we don't foresee that we're going to come back with a new bill to deal with those funding pressures. And then secondly, them changing the APPs is actually much better and encourage that there is continuation rather than cut stops in terms of implementation. But when we come to when we bring the MTBPS, if there are any changes or improvements that departments would want to make in the 2023-24 fiscal year, then of course we will bring those to them. But I think for most of the departments, the current planning cycle is that the medium-term strategic framework is the last year, I think. So already there's new plans that departments have to consider and have to take into account. So the changes in the APPs will not mainly be because of the changes in the ministries, but it's likely to be because
of the cycle of the MTSF that is coming to an end, and we have to do another five-year plan. So those plans would likely change the thinking or the direction of where departments are going, but it's not because of changes in leadership, but mostly, as I said, because the cycle of planning is coming to an end and we need a new cycle. Thank you. Duncan?
Yeah, thanks, Mampo. Yes, apologies, Chair. I did forget to respond to that. I believe MP is on the line, who is responsible for legislation in the Treasury, and I think she might be best placed to answer that if she is still here. Let me check if she is. MP, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Are you able to just assist with the Chair's question around why this particular bill has come to the Select Committee on Appropriations when the ESCOM debt relief issue is not, strictly speaking, an appropriation?
Yes, thank you very much. Good morning, Chairperson and other committee members. The bill is the money in the bill is a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. Therefore, the bill is a money bill, a so-called 77 bill. So I would assume that is why the bill will refer to the SCOA in National Assembly and SCOA in the NCOP. Because we obviously, Treasury doesn't decide which committees deal with a particular bill in Parliament. But I would assume that it's because it is a Section 70 bill, a money bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I did check Honorable Duterte if he's fine. I think now we are 7 minutes to 12. With that clarification, I would like to speak to towards the closure to one respond. Let me thank you, Team Treasury, for availing yourself. We know that initially we planned to meet you tomorrow, but because of the double bookings or triple bookings or a lot of commitments that you needed to fulfill to appear before portfolio committees and select committees and other meetings, you persuaded us to consider postponing. And we thought we cannot postpone, rather we shifted the meeting. Initially last week we were of the opinion that we will take our meeting to 6 o'clock, but amongst ourselves as the team we spoke with because we are one members the Select Committee on Finance and Appropriation, so we took the slot for today. And also I was thinking of, you know, for members that we should not overstretch members unnecessarily if there is an opportunity. And because there are so many commitments also on their side that they need to attend to. So thank you very much for really cooperating and be able to be available on this day, which we were available on. I want to speak to the issue of, you can flag the minutes in the meantime. I want to speak to the issue of Moloto Rail. I know that you are not an implementing department. You are not a Department of Transport. You are responsible for the funds. And ourselves as the Select Committee on Appropriations, we are responsible for the funds. And when funds are here, we have an interest of what do those funds speak to? Where are they directed to? And if there are issues that are of an interest, high interest to the constituencies and are not covered, we have to ask the questions. And I will appeal that if you know that this is not your responsibility, you could only or you were only able to budget for what was brought before you by the relevant department, just say so. Because the explanation that I got, of course, it's real that there's an improvement of roads. And I don't know where that mandate is. This is not a personal matter for me. It's a community matter. It's a public matter. And fortunately, I was in that space at some stage during 2011-2014 in the province. The people of Mpumalanga are suffering. Hence the decision, we put pressure, we couldn't get that, but there was no agreement that I can think of. And I will come with the recommendation to come closer to the situation. Whether this should go to, I mean, the expansion of the road was going to resolve the issue. I'm living there. My constituency is there. That's my home. I know what is happening. The burden, people, some people, because of the problem that the community is experiencing, they have seen an opportunity to do business because there are forever accidents. People are dying day in, day out. The volume is still there. I don't know what expansion are we talking about, because what has happened is just the, what do you call this, the circles at the malls, at the busy areas, but only, traffic circles, only two. But where the busiest at Kwamhlanga crossroads, the busiest at Kwaha crossroads, there's no circles, there's no robot for that matter. And this road, because of the pressure that we've been getting, it has been taken over by National Department of Roads. So the Department of Health also is experiencing pressure because of these accidents that are happening there. So the expansion of the road is not solving anything. It's not making any difference to the people who are using this road every day. And I want to propose, because it might now seem as if it's a personal matter, maybe we need as a committee to resolve on the matter. I know maybe Honorable Ryder might know the road, even if you might have not driven towards where I'm indicating in Thembisilehani, but coming from Gauteng, you know, you must be familiar with the challenges. I think we need as a committee to take a resolution, either to engage the relevant committee with the relevant leadership executive on the matter and get responses or answers that are going to assist and are informed. And maybe also at some stage consider going there to do oversight. Just go and see what is happening there. At this R573 route. It's not helping it's not happening. So my last request to Team Treasury on the matter, can you please give the committee your response in writing so that when we go to the relevant department or committee or relevant office to deal with the matter, we don't fanfuck or make allegations or talk about the hearsay. We know what we are talking about. According to your understanding, please send the written response on my question through the secretariat, and we'll process it from there. It's a serious matter, it's a stony matter, and we can't just look away. We need to deal with it. Thank you very much for your responses and the presentation, and the written response will be expected from you not later than Friday, so that we can process it. When we go to constituency offices, we can deal with it. I mean, constituency period, we can deal with it. And having said that, Dr. Modise and your team, you can be released now. We deal with the in-house matters.
Thank you, Chairperson. And we will definitely provide the written response. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Team Treasury. The minutes, can we check page one? Thank you, Honorable Ryder. I will read it. I will read what you're referring me to.
Yeah, Chairperson, you kind of threw an invite for a comment and then didn't give much space for one. But it is one issue in a department that has many issues. But I think if you read that, it'll take us forward and we can perhaps discuss it offline afterwards.
Okay, page two. Thank you. Page three of the minutes. Page four. And I think that's the last page of the minutes. Can I get a mover for the adoption of the minutes? I mean, yes.
I move for adoption of the minutes, Honorable Chairperson Mama Rahan.
Thank you, Honorable Mama Rahani, for the move. Seconder?
I'll second, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Okam. Honorable members, the buses are here already. Travel safely for those who are going to drive. We'll meet at the house. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson.
The meeting is closed. Thank you.
Thank you, please.